T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
And they're all probably going to be out. I mean, Jason Garrett in Dallas, if he doesn't win a playoff game or two. Ron Rivera in Carolina with the 4-game losing streak. Doug Marrone with the 4-8 record. And then I think you can probably look at Cleveland and see they're going to be a one-and-done situation with Freddie Kitchens. And then you start to go through the rest of the list. And, you know, they'll stand by Matt Nagy in Chicago. No need for a change there. But I think it's going to be as many as 7 or 8, which is a mistake. Because when you look at it, in fact, I used this stat about a week ago. If you go by the draft order, which obviously the draft order dictates the 8 worst teams in the league, going into a week ago, you had 7 of the 8 coaches that were hired in the last year. And that includes Washington with Bill Callahan drafting in the top 8. There was only one with a winning record, Matt LaFleur. I mean, there's not enough coaches to do 7 or 8 replacements a year that are going to be good. And so now what happens, you got, you know, Pat Shurmur, who starts to realize it. Now in his second year, he could be gone. Other second-year coaches that could be gone. It's just not a good situation because now they've run out of coaches to hire.
And as we look at possible candidates, Robert Saleh here in San Francisco is a name that's always been percolating in. How about Jim Harbaugh in Michigan? What do you think the likelihood of those two possibly getting one of those possible available gigs?
Well, I mean, that's what you kind of wonder about, because with Jim losing again to Ohio State, you know, how fed up are they going to be there? I mean, the only difference is the team that I thought he would go to is not going to fire their coach in Miami, Brian Flores, because Stephen Ross is a big donor at Michigan, and you figure that at some point he's going to get Jim Harbaugh there. But now, is Jim going to wait till the year after? Because, you know, Jim putting his name in the mix, if he does, you know, that he certainly is going to get, you know, at least 2 or 3 offers because he's that good. But I still kind of wonder if he's going to stay at Michigan for one more year.
NFL Insider, you can check him out on 710 ESPN Seattle and the podcast Schooled with the Professor, John Clayton, with Joe Cozen-Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Professor, we always appreciate the time. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thank you.
Strong, very strong performance.
The Obi-Wan there.
That's okay. Yeah, I know.
It's a fin. It's a 5 ski. We move on.
It's 5. Now I got to, you know, dial up a new play. Try to keep it moving.
That's okay.
The Harbaugh thing is, just to touch on this briefly before getting back to the NFC playoff picture, is just fascinating to me, because if you look at his record at Michigan, he's outstanding. He's like 44-17, but he's 0-5 against Ohio State, and people are furious, and they forget Rich Rodriguez and Brady Hoke and all of the garbage years they went through over the last decade before he got there. Like, they are a realistic, relevant program right now. They're just not elite. And people are unwilling to accept that. Like, what are your expectations as a university when it comes to your football program? Just don't worry about
that. But if you're Michigan, your expectations are, I should be in the Final Four. I should be playing in the Rose Bowl every year. That's the expectation at Michigan. That's just the way things are there.
Or
it's not a year.
That's not reality, though. Michigan thinks it's something it is not.
But you got to be able to beat Ohio State.
At some point,
it's not like you're going up against Alabama every year,
right,
you know.
And they've only defeated Michigan State twice in the Harbaugh era as well. That's like the baby version of a rivalry that they have going on. Ohio State is the big one. If you only win 2 games a year, Ohio State better be one of them. You can keep your job doing that, but they're getting smoked by Ohio State.
Destroyed.
Yeah.
Like, they get embarrassed every year in that game. They go into that game, and Ohio State beats up on them like they beat up on Rutgers, and people in Michigan don't like it. Ohio State is really nasty, though, by the way. This isn't like Virginia Tech, where Virginia just couldn't get past them, and then, hey, go Cavaliers. They
beat
the Hokies.
But Michigan is also very dull. If you watch a lot of Michigan football, it's not a very interesting team.
That's his biggest problem.
The defense is pretty good, but he runs that same sort of power football. You don't let the QB throw it. You're trying to beat Purdue 13-9. That's not that appealing to the donors.
The problem is they hired a passing game guy this year, and they overhauled the offense to try to be new age, and it didn't work. And that's okay. But LSU did the same thing, and it was gangbusters.
Yeah, it was.
Like, it worked so well bringing over Joe. I can't remember. Joe something from the Saints. He was the Joe, not Joe Kelly.
Not Joe Horn.
Yeah, not Joe Horn.
No, Joe Rogan.
Joe Rogan, no, I smoke crack, Joe Rogan.
Fortinball, Namath, Montana, Kennedy.
There
because
you go.
He was the, you know.
He was the patriarch. The
sorry, DiMaggio.
He brought in all the money and passed it down. DiMaggio outside looking in. Outside looking in.
Outside looking in for DiMaggio.
Last four out for Joe DiMaggio. Eight coaches he thinks could be out after this
That's
year.
That's huge.
Eight.
Oh, what a carousel
it'll
be.
Fourth of the league.
Wasn't that the number last year? I believe it was eight last year.
Jeez.
They came in.
And the greater point to that is there aren't eight replacements out there that are worthy of the jobs.
No.
Who's going to get there? I think you were sniffing around about Saleh, though, right?
I threw out both, and I didn't want to follow up and press the professor because I asked about Saleh and Harbaugh, and he took the Harbaugh bait.
And that's a sexy name. That's fine.
And John actually said in the interview, he's like, there's just not enough coaches out there to fill in for these guys who lose jobs, and that's no disrespect to Robert Saleh, but he's never been a head coach anywhere, yet he's going to be a guy who gets interest, if not interviews.
But last year at this time, weren't we all sitting here saying, Kyle Shanahan needs to have a sacrificial lamb, and Saleh's the guy. Look at him. He's meek on the sideline. His defense stinks. They're getting run up every week. That team needs to make a change, and it's got to be with one of the coaches, and that's going to be the guy who's going to lose his job. 1 year later, all of a sudden, we're thinking he might get interviews for a head coaching job.
He was on the sizzle reel at the end of the first quarter. You know, Jim, when you go to break after the first quarter and you show like the five best highlights with music, they try to sizzle you out on the 15 count as a play-by-play man.
Wow, listen to this guy.
Shanahan wasn't in there. It was Robert Saleh pumping his fist as we sizzled the break on the big game against Baltimore.
I like that, though. I don't want a rah-rah head coach. Shanahan's got the perfect demeanor. I don't need some guy yelling and screaming and dancing and smiling.
Tell
and
that
crying.
To Seattle. Pete Carroll's made a living doing
Pete's,
that, baby.
Pete's very enthusiastic. That's fine. I'm talking about, like, Garrett. When Garrett wins a game, he comes out, he's just ear-to-ear grinning. It's just clapping and laughing and all this. It's just handle your business. Just handle your business. The Pete Carroll thing, he's earned it. He's all about that. He's all about having fun and competing and living life to the fullest. That's his thing, and it works. But it doesn't work for everyone else. Same thing on the other end of the spectrum, the yelling and screaming. Dudes don't want to be yelled at anymore. 22-year-old kids are not interested in some coach barking at them. Like Bill Cowher in this day and age, I don't know if that works. People are talking about in Jacksonville, we'll get rid of Marone and just bring Tom Coughlin back. No one in Jacksonville is going to buy into Tom Coughlin. Is if you're not 5 minutes early, you're late. The new age of kids, these young kids, they're not into that. Kids now, 22-year-old kids, they want to intercept a pass and they want to celebrate in the end zone. It doesn't matter if you're down 24-0 to the Chiefs. Like that was, to me, that was so absurd to see the Raiders celebrating that, but they're not the only ones that do it. It's just the Instagram culture. I did something. So now look at me and applaud me. It doesn't matter what the reality is. The reality is you're down 24. You're on the road. You're getting your tails kicked in. Nice pick. Get to the sidelines. Oh, by the way, it was overturned. All right, get back out there and make a play. The reality now is the bigger picture in the grand scheme doesn't matter. It's I made a play. Now I need everyone to look at me, hit the like button, celebrate me, acknowledge me, and now we can all move on. You don't see that crap in New England. That's why New England constantly is winning because they're just focused on one thing. It's just one thing. That's it. So it's not to bang on the Raiders necessarily. It happens everywhere. You see it with everybody. The Cardinals were down big in a game and had some INT. They had this group celebration in the end zone. I was like, what are you doing? Yeah. You're down 21. What are you doing? So I don't know. Some of these guys, you've got to have a different demeanor as a coach. The yelling and screaming thing doesn't work anymore. That's what I love about Shanahan. He just seems even keel. He seems relatable. He seems like he holds people accountable. He's got good leadership in the locker room, and he's got this thing moving in the right direction.
He seems adult, and he's locked in. That's what he is. He's adult, and he's locked in. Yeah. And he'll let Saleh. Man, maybe on the defensive side, you need a guy who's going to be rah-rah. Now, again, Saleh wasn't all that rah-rah guy in the past couple of years. Right?
There wasn't a lot to rah-rah about.
Now that he's got talent, though, so that's where the question comes in. Is it because of the talent, or is it because Saleh really knows what's going on? It just took him a while to institute what he wanted to do.
It's probably both. Okay. It's generally the answer, the least appealing answer is probably the correct one, which is it's probably both. He's probably better than he looked last year as a coordinator, but he's probably not as great as he looks this year because he's got solid talent. That's fine. Put good coaching with good talent, you get good results, and that's what you're seeing this year. You're getting great results. I would imagine he goes out there and he's going to get interviews. The question is whether or not one really good season as a coordinator is going to get someone to bite as a head coach to give out that guaranteed 4 or 5 year deal, whatever it is. I mean, we've seen it in college. Like Cliff Kingsbury did nothing at Texas Tech and got a deal with Arizona. So maybe it does happen. And if I'm him, I'm wondering if you want that job now. Like he might have the chance to be selective. If he looks at this defense and this team and this organization and he thinks, look, this is sustainable for at least the next few years. rather than go out there and take the first thing that might be offered,
right,
why don't I wait for the spot? Why don't I coach another good year of defense, put some more good tape together, go through the interview process this year so you know what it's about. Very important to go do those interviews and not get the job. Because that's not a 15-minute sit-down interview where you get to know each other, you answer some questions, fill out a one-page application, you're gone. Those things last an entire day. You meet with a bunch of people. You are expected to bring in a binder or a PowerPoint presentation and show everyone in that building how you are going to rebuild that franchise. Not just the team. They want to know what you're going to do as a coach, what you're going to do as an organizer, a manager, a leader, what the culture is going to be like, everything. And if you don't have that completely buttoned up, you're not getting that job. That's how Mike Tomlin got the job in Pittsburgh. Tomlin was an afterthought. He was a Rooney Rule hire. They brought him in and they were trying to satisfy the Rooney Rule. He wowed them to the point where they said, this is the guy. This is the guy. They didn't need to look any further. He was that good in the interview
process. And if you're Robert Saleh, you know that the job is going to open up another job in another year. In the past 3 years, Joe, 20 of the 32 NFL teams have changed out their head coach.
Past 3 years.
That's it. So in 17, 18,
ooh, who are the 12
and
19. Would be the trivia question.
That would be.
We could get that. We could go 12 for 12 on that, couldn't we?
I would hope so. You know all 32 head coaches. And so to really wrap your brain around who the 12 longest tenured are, The shortest of those guys is a guy who's been coaching for 4 years. He was hired in 2016, so just 12 guys. But that, to your point about Robert Saleh and jobs are going to be open. It's 5 jobs 3 years ago, then it was 6, and then 9 this past season, including Bill Callahan, who came in this year, as John Clayton told us earlier.
Jeez.
20 of 32, Jim, in the past 3 years.
But what I'd like to do is take that 20 and say how many were offensive minds, how many were defensive minds, because the trend is you're picking an offensive guy to come in and take over your team. How many different teams, including your Philadelphia Eagles, including my Chicago Bears, other than the Denver Broncos, when they go a 60-year-old Vic Fangio, who is a great defensive coordinator but is having tough sledding in Denver, aren't most of these interviews/jobs going to guys with the offensive mind right
Detroit
now?
Detroit went to the pencil,
that's
who
right.
I believe is a defensive mind.
That's, right. That's right.
Head coach.
Also an engineer.
You've got Frank Reich, Pat Shurmur.
Frank Reich was offensive minded. Yes. Shurmur's offensive
John
minded.
John Gruden's offensive. Yeah. Mike Vrabel is defensive minded.
I go defense.
Sean McDermott.
Defensive-minded. Defensive coordinator in Carolina, and then he took over for Jim Johnson as the defensive coordinator in Philadelphia.
And then, yeah, you're getting into Kitchens and all.
You have to go offense for one very key reason. If you hire an offensive-minded head coach, you can have him work with and develop the quarterback. He can also call the plays. He can handle all that, and he's stable. He's stable as in you've got your play caller and your guy managing the quarterback as long as you want him there. If you go defensive-minded, say Ron Rivera. Some people think Ron Rivera to the Giants would be great. Okay, so who's going to be the guy that works with the quarterback? It's going to be an offensive coordinator. You're going to try to bring in a bright young mind like Kyle Shanahan in Atlanta. One of two things happens. Either the guy fails, so you're in a bad spot, or the guy succeeds, and then he leaves and gets a head coaching job, and you're in a bad spot. You have to have the offensive mind as the head coach, because if you go defensive, you're going to have too much turnover at the play caller position.
I've always been a believer that you can look at a defensive guy, and for some reason we think, well, all he knows is his one particular defense. You know what he does all week for 16 weeks? Looks at 16 different offenses.
Yes.
If there's a guy who knows offense, it's a defensive coordinator. And if you use your theory, I'm going to volley it back at you when I say one of the best defensive coaches all time is Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
And he's hand-in-hand with a guy who's a quarterback. Now, I don't know if he developed him, but he certainly works with him, and he certainly talks to him. And we saw that picture from Sunday night, who was sitting right, and they weren't looking at one another. I don't know what the relationship is like, but they were sitting next to one another. As the game is going on and the defense is on the field for the Patriots, Belichick is sitting on the bench talking to Tom Brady. So I know the offensive mind is the sexy get. Everyone wants to roll up 40 points a game. But don't ever think a defensive coordinator doesn't know a heck of a lot about offense.
Just depends on the pairing, because you look at L.A. now with McVay and Wade Phillips. Do they go to the Super Bowl with fill-in-the-blank defensive coordinator? I don't think so, because
no,
McVay used his gravitas and his experience to his great benefit.
Yeah. Belichick is an excellent point. He's also the outlier for a couple key reasons. Number one, he doesn't call either, or at least he's not trying to call either. He wants an O coordinator and a D coordinator so he can oversee both. But more importantly, in his entire duration in New England, how many different play callers have operated underneath him? What is it, 2? Charlie Weiss and Josh McDaniels. And
that's
I think
it.
When McDaniels left, he stepped in and then McDaniels came back and he gave it back to McDaniels. So there was a temporary fill-in. Brady has only had three or four guys through his entire career calling plays. I did this study last year for something we were doing on this show. I think it had to do with Garoppolo and developing him. And I went through and highlighted like all these longevity quarterbacks who have been with the same team for the longest time. Eli Manning, Phillip Rivers, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. They all of them, all the guys who have had success have had minimal play callers throughout their career. Rodgers came in. Mike McCarthy was calling the plays. Mike McCarthy gave the plays to someone else for 1 year.
Joe Philbin? Or is that later?
It may have been Philbin.
Okay.
But it was 1 year. It didn't work out. McCarthy took him back and called the plays entirely up until he was fired last year. Rodgers has only ever known three guys calling plays. Wow. Brady's at like three or four. Peyton Manning in his career had Tom Moore for like 11 straight years in Indianapolis calling plays.
Alex Smith had seven in his first 7 years.
Derek Carr.
Jimmy Ray. Remember the Jimmy Ray era?
Yeah, boy, oh boy.
Brought him out of a bed and breakfast, I believe.
That's the thing, though.
That's true, actually. You're right.
How do you expect Baker Mayfield to get any sort of success, any sort of traction when last year it was Hugh Jackson, then it was Greg Williams and also Freddie Kitchens. Now it's Freddie Kitchens. Now next year it's going to be someone different. Daniel Jones, your first year is with Pat Shurmur. He's going to get axed. Then in year two, you're going to have someone else. Sam Darnold had Todd Bowles last year and whoever was calling plays. Now he's got Adam Gase. If Gase is one and done, he's going to have his third coach slash play caller in 3 years. How do you expect those kids to succeed or have any chance of reaching their full potential when you shuffle everything around them at every possible turn? This is why Washington is never going anywhere. Washington's constantly in a state of flux. Jacksonville right now. Look at the decision making on behalf of the Jaguars over the last few years. How many of the Jaguars' first round picks currently play for the Rams? Bortles, Fowler, all the picks they gave away.
Ramsey.
In the Ramsey trade. Ramsey himself, or what they got back in that trade. They gave away Ramsey. These teams, it's Lombardi calls it this. He comes on with this all the time. Battleship football. Here's our plan. A1, miss. All right, new plan. C6, miss. New plan. D4, hit. Okay, this is the plan. D3, miss. Up, new plan. E7. Right? That battleship football. You're just changing on the fly. There's no real plan.
And it's the continuity that you need. Here are the 12 teams that have had coaches the longest. And tell me what they have in common, Jim. Philadelphia, Atlanta, Super Bowl teams. Houston, always in the playoffs. Minnesota, been good for a long time.
Solid team.
Zimmer's very good.
Kansas City, I like Zimmer. Andy Reid. Carolina, they've been to a Super Bowl.
Chico.
Dallas Cowboys, they're the outlier, kind of run by Jerry Jones. Then you go to Seattle, Super Bowl winner. Baltimore, Super Bowl winner, best team in football currently. Pittsburgh Steelers, Super Bowl winner. New Orleans and New England. Those are the longest tenured teams with their current coach, and they've all been successful. Yes, they got it right at the top, but also you got to have that continuity to do all the things you're talking about.
The ability to withstand the tough times, to not just sit there when the water gets a little rocky. Pittsburgh's the ultimate on this. There are multiple times with Cowher, multiple times with Tomlin where people were like, it's time for a change, and they just sat it out. Tomlin's doing a really nice job this year, given all the injuries and everything else that's taking place. Plus, with as crazy as Antonio Brown looks, Tomlin looks like a genius for how he managed that up until that guy got loose. You work your way through. What was the other one? I'm blanking on it. It was someone that I went down the Antonio Brown rabbit hole, and that's what happened.
See, that'll do it to you.
Carolina or possibly Dallas. Dallas is the outlier with Jerry Jones, but
and they've got the team. That's the problem. They've got the team. They just need the decision maker. For crying out loud. Oh, for the text line, Chilton Auto Body 95795. Yeah, Bill O'Brien stepped in as a play caller while McDaniels was gone, but his Weiss McDaniels, O'Brien McDaniels. Like, that's right. One of the reasons why Brady has so much success. He doesn't have all this turnover he has to deal with. He doesn't have to deal with a new playbook, new language.
Hold on. I'm going to volley this back at you. Is some of the reason for this turnover the fact that they made the wrong choice at quarterback, right? Daniel Jones from what you see, is he an NFL quarterback? Are you afraid to play him twice a year for the next 5 years?
Not right now,
Yeah, exactly. Dwayne Haskins, same thing. Is it because just the Redskins stink or because they made a bad choice in picking the wrong guy in the wrong spot?
I think you have a variety of factors. One, you have really bad organizations like the Redskins who just don't know what they're doing. The Redskins, the Dolphins, there are teams that are just consistently bad because they have awful ownership. There's cheap ownership like Cincinnati as well. Then there are the teams that don't have realistic expectations and they fire coaches because they're not realistic. This happens in the SEC. Nick Saban, everyone's bar is you got to beat Saban. That's an unrealistic bar.
Yeah.
Mark Richt won 10 games every year at Georgia. Every year Georgia was relevant, but it wasn't good enough. Les Miles got run out of LSU because it wasn't good enough. You couldn't beat Saban. Yeah. Harbaugh could get run from Michigan. It's the best Michigan's been in decades, but he can't get past Ohio State. When you set unreasonable expectations, then you have that itchy trigger finger. Pittsburgh understands there's going to be rocky waters. They know they might not get by New England. They're not going to fire Tomlin because he couldn't get by New England. Newsflash, nobody gets by New England except Philadelphia a couple years ago. All right, so
it all comes back to
it always comes back
Philadelphia
to
Philadelphia Philly Special. Patriots.
What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Canon USA Inc. Terrell Owens. We'll speak to him next. Joe Cozen Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe Lowen Dibs featuring Jim Cosimore.
You are filthy.
On 95.7 The Game.
Hall of Famer, former Niners wide receiver, 95.7 The Football Insider, Terrell Owens with Joe Cozen Dibs on 95.7 The Game. T.O., it's always a pleasure. Thank you for the time. Sunday's game in Baltimore, man. I got to tell you, the Niners may have been on the wrong end of that, but that was a hell of a football game, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They definitely proved that they're a team to be reckoned with. As I said last week, this is definitely, I think everybody has said it, and even after the game, I mean, this definitely could have been a preview to the Super Bowl. You think about, you know, obviously the game going down to a last-minute field goal. I mean, it could have been anybody's game at that point. Obviously, the Niners obviously had some chances to possibly come out on top on that of the game, but you got to tip your hats off to both sides of the ball. Defensively, I mean, they kind of stifled each other. But, you know, obviously Lamar's he's the MVP candidate for – he's not that – you know, not an MVP candidate for any reason other than what we saw on Sunday. I mean, the guy's electric. He's very valuable to their team. So, again, we may see them down the road.
Just about 60 yards away from passing Michael Vick for most rushing yards by a quarterback in an NFL season. Just how do you stop Lamar Jackson, T.O.?
It's hard. A guy of that caliber, I mean, he's dynamic. He's electric. He can beat you with the arm. He's beat you with the feet. I think he's dispelled the notion of he's just a running quarterback, and that's what you have to account for. He's one of those one-in-a-lifetime players. I know one of the questions you guys are going to ask me is, you know, how does he compare to Michael Vick? I watched Michael Vick play, played against him. Lamar Jackson is a very much more polished version of Michael Vick. When you think of being a pocket passer, Lamar Jackson can do that. He can do it in the pocket. He can do it outside the pocket and with the intangibles of his skill set to make some things happen when the plays break down. That's what makes him so exciting and so different than all the other quarterbacks that have come out and that he's been compared to. So Michael Vick is obviously the closest thing that we can compare him to. But when you think about a more polished version of Michael Vick, that's very, very scary.
Hey, T.O., what does it do for a wide receiver to have such a mobile, active quarterback who can be a threat running, but be a threat throwing on the run? Does it make your job easier? Does it make your job tougher because you're not quite sure if he's going to tuck and run? How does it change what a wide receiver does when you've got a guy like Lamar Jackson?
Oh, for me, it was very advantageous. I played with a number of mobile quarterbacks. You think about Steve Young. You think about Jeff Garcia, who we tailored to his strength because he wasn't a pocket passer. He wasn't your drop back type of style of quarterback that's going to throw the ball all over the field. So when you learn the West Coast offense and when plays break down, they have something we call the scramble drill. And depending on where you're on the field, you have to be in relation with the quarterback. And I was very savvy and very heads up when plays broke down to get in the quarterback's vision. I had to get in his eyesight in order to make plays. And I think, you know, what makes the plays work when plays break down is if the quarterback head is up and he's looking downfield and he's looking for receivers. It doesn't work if the quarterback is you know, gets tunnel vision and he doesn't see guys down the field. So wherever you are, depending on where you're on the field, you have to get in relationship with the quarterback to get in his vision. And so when those type of plays break down, like I said, the defense is out of sorts, but you know where you are, where you need to be, and the quarterback knows too, based on those scramble rules.
Terrell Owens joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Was it an advantage for the Niners playing someone like Lamar Jackson in the rain? Because the thought process is if they get together again in Miami for the Super Bowl and the weather's nice, would that be better for the Niners or better for the Ravens?
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, the game can go either way. I mean, obviously, when you can't throw the ball as much, it's much more of a running back game. The style of the game changes, but you never can tell. You never know. So you just have to play your assignments defensively. I think they did a great job of kind of minimizing him to a degree. The guy, like I said, the guy is just so electric, so dynamic. So his skill set is just off the charts right now. And you have to account for everything. So that's one of the things you have to be honest with your defensive assignments. And I think they did a pretty good job, I think, just trying to kind of funnel him, try to keep him inside. Once he gets outside of the pocket, he's very, very dangerous. So I think they'll look at that film and they'll see what they could have done better. And then the things they did, you know, good on, I think they will try to enhance that. But, again, the game came down to a field goal. You can't ask for much more than that. Obviously, you want to come out with a win, but I think they're very, very encouraged as to how they played. And I think, you know, if they meet down the road again, I think, you know, both teams have enough tape to kind of assess where they can be better and where, you know, obviously games can be won. I think one of the situations late in the game, the 4th-and-1, you know, obviously, coach, that's his decision. Hindsight is 20/20. 4th-and-1, I think me personally, you want to try to run the ball to get the first down. But that's one of those decisions you have to live with once you make that call.
T.O., Seattle and the Niners both 10-2. One of those teams likely to be a wild card and have to go on the road in the first playoff weekend against a team with a worse record. Do you think the NFL needs to look at that and change it so that even if you're the wild card, you still get to host in that scenario?
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I mean, to be a wild card and host a game, that doesn't seem right. Obviously that format needs to change. I mean, to have a winning record, top of division, and have to travel for a wild card game, that just doesn't seem like the right format for any sport for that matter. So I'm sure that's something that needs to be changed, because you look at that situation, it just doesn't seem fair.
T.O., I'm interested in this New Orleans game coming up for the 49ers. After the physical, emotional battle they had in Baltimore with the weather, with the fans, with everything that went into it, and to lose on a last-second field goal, now you're going to go to Florida and you're going to train, then you're going to go into New Orleans. How tough is it to get yourself up physically and mentally when you just gave it your all, and now you got to go into another very difficult place to play? Is this as much a mental battle for the 49ers as it's going to be a physical battle?
Probably more so mental. I don't think it's a situation. Every game is different. Obviously they know that, the New Orleans Saints, they're a great, opponent. So again, they're going to go in there obviously with the same mindset, to go in there and stop Breeze. I think the game probably is going to help them because again, like I said, when you play a great team, like the Baltimore Ravens, I'm not saying that the New Orleans Saints aren't great, but I don't think they're as good as the Baltimore Ravens. So they're not going to, you know, let down by any means. But I think a game like that prepares you and it allows you to really kind of play a little bit freely, understanding that, you know, you can't take them lightly. You can't overestimate an opponent. You can't underestimate an opponent. Every game is going to be different. So obviously they know they have some weapons there offensively, with Breeze and Michael Thomas and those guys, Mark Ingram. They're running the ball well. They're throwing the ball well. Not Mark Ingram, but Kamara. Those guys are very electric, just as well. So offensively, Jimmy G just has to just keep building, improving on what he's been doing week to week. And those receivers, they're getting better every week. You're seeing those guys, Samuels, all those guys, they're stepping up. Emmanuel Sanders, I think, with his leadership, those guys watching him be a pro, run routes, understanding what they're supposed to be doing in those pass sets, and you've seen the improvement of those receivers. So Kittle's, you know, you can't say enough about this guy. This guy is very, very passionate. He's going to play hard, and again, they're steadily getting there. There's a few more games left to go in the season, and you're going to see these guys, you know, I think get where we want them to be, and that's at the Super Bowl. But you got to take it one game at a time.
Terrell Owens joining us here on 95.7 The Game. What did you think about the Cowboys on Thanksgiving, how Buffalo rolled into their house and just destroyed them in their building?
Not surprising. not surprising. I've had a couple conversations with friends. Obviously, I played with the Cowboys for 3 years, and people's always asking me my takes. And again, I told one of my good friends, like, I feel that Buffalo's going to go in there and roll up and steamroll over them just like they did. When you think of how the Cowboys started, you know, started out hot 3-0. It's not how you start; it's how you finish. And, you know, obviously they've had an ebb and flow type of season. They haven't had the type of season that everybody always expects, you know, at the beginning. And, you know, they get everybody's hopes up. This has been going on for like 10 years now since I left the Cowboys. And the same guy that was there then, he's still there now. They definitely, I feel like, and I've been open about this, they need a quarterback. I mean, they need a head coach change. They need to change. They need to shake it up. For whatever reason, they're not getting it done under the head coach coaching of Jason Garrett.
Terrell Owens, Hall of Famer, former Niner wide receiver, 95.7 The Game football insider, kind enough to join Joe, Coz, and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. T.O., we always appreciate the time, man. Take care. We'll talk soon.
No doubt. If you listen low, get well. Feel better, guy.
Very nice. Very nice sentiment.
Heartfelt.
Right there.
That was really cool.
That is cool.
Let's drop that. Let's make sure that doesn't get back.
Yeah.
There's no place for that on the show.
Don't put that on Radio Rewind.
It's a show of anger and hostility. It's not a show of goodwill.
Of kindness. And the guy's, he's got a stuffy head. Yeah. I mean, he has a stuffy nose. It's not like he's got mono, for crying out loud.
You want goodwill, you go to Hallmark. Buy yourself a nice little card.
You know what? Goodwill? Go to Goodwill.
Go to Goodwill, too.
Yeah, you know.
Do something nice for society.
What are we at Joe Lo and Dibs? Aren't we for, what? Loving and caring. What are you saying about helping people? Helping people.
People helping people. Yeah.
Helping people. Helping
kind.
People.
It's not HPHP. It's PHP. People helping people. Everybody love everybody.
Helpful people helping people get help. HPHP.
I'm gonna need help for this final hour.
Hang in there, Cozy.
The idea of, say, the Seahawks and Niners both finishing with these ridiculously impressive records. Say they're both sitting like 13-3, right? And one of them has to go on the road as a wild card team, while Philadelphia or Dallas comes into the playoffs at like 9-7 and gets to host a game. Feels like every few years we have this scenario. There's some outrage at the time. We all move on. Does it happen enough where it warrants a discussion about changing the playoff format? Or is it just one of these things where like every 5 years it takes place, we're like, oh, we need an overhaul, and then we move on? Because it doesn't seem like it happens enough to get people upset. It's just, this is why you build your team to win your division. The only focus is on winning the division. If you handle that business, everything else is fine. You don't need to worry about anything but winning the division. So do you consider the idea of any sort of change?
I'm all for changing. You know what it's going to, part of it is going to be, if an NBA makes major changes to what they do, other sports leagues will fall in line. They will see how that goes. They will measure it, and they will see, what can we do to fix our game? Secondarily, I'm a complete cynic. If this same scenario is happening to the New York Football Giants, or the New York Football Jets, or the New England Patriots, where they don't get home games because there's some quirk in the schedule, and there's a crappy division out there where a team goes 8-8, or God forbid 9-7, and wins their division, and all of a sudden everyone's up in arms back east, I think they should reseed. I think you play your 16 games and you go 1-6, no matter what the records are. I'd love to see them.
So
see
the four
it
divisional
way.
Winners still get in, the two wild cards still get in, and that at that point
you see
you
them.
Reseed okay. Based on record.
Yep. So Eagles Dallas, the winner of that's going on the road in the opening round.
They're
going to
be the sixth seed.
Enough.
Yeah, if exactly. You're 8-8, and I think it becomes most galling in the situation of Seattle from a few years ago, where they were 7-9 and they got to host that game, and I think they ended up winning that playoff game.
I'm almost positive that was Beastquake.
Or 7-8-1 they were. They weren't 7-9. You pointed that out before.
They weren't 500. They right. Weren't even 500. They hosted a playoff game and then they won. They were 10-point dogs at home. I know because yep. I laid it. Thanks, Breeze.
Really?
Oh, yeah. But you know what? That's one of those games. That's the rare game. The rare gambling game where not only do you lose, but you completely flip your opinion and you just start rooting for the other team. And not because to spite the team for not covering. When Seattle did what they were doing and that beast mode play happened, unless you hate Seattle or right. Love New Orleans, how could you not get on that train?
Right.
Because that was before all the Legion of Boom stuff. That was before they were who they are. So that right there, it was like, man, if I'm going to lose a bet, fine. I'll lose like this. This okay. is awesome. That was an awesome play.
Yeah, crowd so loud that it caused a seismic activity up there in
is
Seattle.
Is that true or is that still myth? The Pacific Northwest is filled with myth. Sasquatch, Beastquake.
Yeah.
I feel as if that's not true. This
affordable
island,
coffee.
What's the island up there that has the TV show that has the treasure, but it's too dangerous, no one can get to it?
There's a bunch of islands up there. There's Bainbridge Island, Vashon Island.
There's one that I believe has some sort of treasure supposedly buried on it. So, of course, there's a TV show
right.
about these guys who have dedicated their lives to finding this treasure rather than, you know, just get jobs and pay bills and, you know, do what the rest of us are out here
We don't do that in the Northeast. In the Northwest. They don't do that. Get regular jobs.
We
kind of have the same ethos as them, don't we?
I don't know. I don't know why you're dropping we's there.
It's the difference between Maine and Philadelphia on the East Coast. You know better. It's not the same thing.
I don't know if there's as big a difference between San Francisco and Seattle as there is between Maine and Philadelphia.
Everybody hates everybody. That's E-H-E. Everybody hate everybody. That's what that philosophy is back there.
And
get out of my way. It's cold.
Nobody helping nobody.
There you go. All righty.
Forget about it.
Forget about it.
Eagles will be fine. On to the Sixers. Nice win last night.
Curse of Oak Island, is that it? Curse of Oak
that
Island?
That might be it. Okay. Yeah, that might be it. Something going on with all that.
You want to give credit to the text line?
Oh, absolutely.
Chilton Auto Body 95795.
Ripping off material.
510-925-209-707-775.
The Sasquatch thing is the most ridiculous of all, because every time there's some evidence of a Sasquatch, right, it's always one. There's never a family or a herd or a pack.
Right.
There's just one. So where did this thing come from? Is it asexual?
Adopted, Joe.
Like a plant? Like how does it reproduce? There's always just one. Same with Loch Ness. Oh, there's just one. Well, where'd it come from? It hatched from what? And then what? It mutated? And then that's it.
Chicken and the egg, man.
Like, it's so stupid to buy into some of these when there's just the one.
Right.
Now, if you want to peddle me some sort of thing on aliens, and you tell me about all these alien landings, you show me the gimbal video, you show me the Tic Tac video, now you got something. Now you got your boy hooked. Now I'm going down that rabbit hole. You show me one hairy bipedal, is it pronounced, being in the Pacific Northwest. Like, where's the other one? There's got to be another one somewhere.
Bipedal.
Did we lose our license for that?
Right. You may want to do the legal here, Joe. Squeeze it in now while we have it.
What do you mean?
No, he's just joking around because you said bipedal.
I didn't know. That sounded, it sounded like...
Isn't that what it is when you stand up on 2 feet?
Bipedal, I think, yeah.
Is it pronounced pedal?
I think so. You're close enough. He thought you said penal, bipenal.
What are you, 10?
He actually is 10 emotionally. It's been confirmed.
I'm in the low chair. So, you know, I have to play that card at some point between 6 and 10.
Shout out low. He had the over last night, and he let me know it as soon as it got there.
My
phone was blowing up. Wasn't sick to the point where he didn't cash himself away.
Real sick there, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. I got the whole talk to text. Came through perfectly clear. Perfectly clear.
Bob and the Billions in 5 minutes to get your shout outs in.
Oh, that's fun.
Autobody 957-95.
D's,
let him go.
Bring it strong, D's.
Anytime D's in the nuts, text in this guy. You talk about him being 10 years old.
I am 10 years old.
You want to watch him lose it? Up in 5 minutes, Cozmore loses it.
I think that dude created a Twitter handle too, because I got followed on Twitter recently by a handle D's in the nuts.
That dude, listen, that is creative. I'm a fan of that. I might follow D's in the nuts. When the show's on, I don't follow you. Dan, I don't follow you, but I'm going to follow D's in the nuts.
You don't follow D's in the M's.
No, he doesn't. We've been over this.
I was here. It was awesome.
Unpleasantries.
Yeah, I took a joke. That was a real drive-by that day. You guys just took me down on my Twitter follows.
Yeah, I knew it was coming. I just sat back.
That was nasty.
I scripted my first 10 insults that day, and all of them were slung toward you, Jim.
I know.
Tell me what you do with this. I want to throw this out there because I was trying to do the research on it yesterday. Very quickly, Patriots -3 hosting the Chiefs this weekend. What do you do there? What do you do? Now, before you say anything, I'll let you think about it. I'm going to lay out something I came across. I thought to myself when I saw this, how often is New England a 3-point favorite or less in Foxborough? Like, that is just rare, mm-hmm. right? So I went back to the year after Brady came back from injury. So 2009 all the way up until now. And it turns out regular season plus playoffs, they've played 100 home games since then. Exactly 100 home games. In those 100 home games, they have been favored by 3 or less. Eight times. In those 8 games, they're 8-0 straight up, 8-0 against the spread.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a trend.
It's, yeah. Now, 3 of those games featured them coming off losses, one of which was that Monday night game against Kansas City when everyone was like, oh, is Brady done? Is Garoppolo the guy? And Belichick nearly stabbed somebody at the press conference for asking that question. And then they flew back and played Cincinnati on like a Sunday night the next week and smoked the Bengals by like 40. Just embarrassed them. A lot of people, I tried to talk about this, because a lot of people, no, New England's not the same team. And I'm sitting there looking at that. I'm like, they feel like they're baiting me in with that point spread. I don't know. These are the wars I wage with myself on a daily basis.
And Kansas City in somewhat of a letdown spot because they just absolutely rocked the Raiders at home. And they got a 2-game lead in the division. So the division isn't totally sewn up, but there's not the same level of urgency to win this game at New England than there was to beat Oakland at home and get that leg up in the division. So, man, based on that 8-0 trend, I'd have to say you take the Patriots and you lay the 3.
Let me ask you, how much of eye test goes into your determination? Or are you strictly – you the Farhan Zaidi?
Lots.
So you go eye test.
I try. It's, if I've watched enough – like, eye test was Packers over Giants this past weekend. Now, everyone was betting that game. That was the most publicly bet game of the season, was Packers over Giants. That's rarely a spot you want to be in. You do not want to be with the entire world on the same game. It's very dangerous. Mm-hmm. That's generally where I would say I'm either going the other way or I'm passing. That game, I sat there and I said, no, public's got it right. Eye test. Giants stink. They stink in every scenario. Home, road, bad team, good team, they stink. And the Packers, coming off a loss, I've watched them this year, they were going to tear that defense up. And that's exactly what they did. They tore them up. Rodgers had a huge day.
So you do a little eye test. Because,
of course.
Because if I look at the Patriots, for some reason, they're 10-2, but eye test, they don't scare me.
Offense is highly susceptible.
Yep.
Offense is highly. Brady's got his worst quarterback percentage of, I believe, his career. Yards per attempt is way down. He is not the same guy. And they keep trying to point to these weapons. Sunday night in Houston, he had Sanu, he had Dorsett, he had Edelman. There were enough weapons on the field for him to make plays. They couldn't make the plays. And Houston's defense stinks. That pass defense
was
like 25th, and they looked fantastic.
They did. They looked like maulers on that night.
Some could make the case in that game that the problem was that if you looked at the Patriots, it was like 4 weeks in a row of marquee games. At Baltimore, they had the afternoon game in Philly, they had the afternoon game against Dallas, like all these nationally televised games, and eventually it just, big game after big game, it catches up to you. You know, you only have so many.
Yeah, and the defense of New England is still darn near elite. They're not quite where the Ravens were when they averaged about 10.8 points a game, but they're averaging 12.1 points a game allowed. So the defense, as much as Brady has come back to earth, the defense is still nasty, and I think good defenses give Kansas City a problem, especially on the road.
Shout them out, 95795. It's time for Bob and the Billions.
Do you have any say over what your office was going to look like here?
Great question.
Yeah.
Well, we can go see it after this.
Yeah.
Go see it. Low can come. Just low.
You know what? Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, that's usually how it is.
No, it takes, one of the takes group. Too much abuse here. I got to be honest. I listen to you guys.
Now, I love this. You're one of the Billions?
You know what? One of the Billions. Yes.
Hey, Jim, you know what song this is, Jim?
I don't.
This is the new Michigan fight song, because they need a new fight song after they got motorboated again by the Ohio State Buckeyes. The Ohio State University, Joe.
You're doing a good job coming up with a different one every single day.
Gotta keep it fresh, kid.
You're doing a good job of it.
Hey, thanks, Jim.
Bob and the Billions, get him in. Shout out to Andrew Pretari from Redwood. Can I even read the thing out before the buzz? The guy's not even going to hear the shout out if you hit the bell right away.
Let's try it again, Joe.
Andrew.
Good job.
Thing goes off on its own, kid.
It does. It's got a mind of its own.
There's a guy who tried to get me. I saw you some tin. Not going to say the whole thing.
Wow.
He tried.
Shout out Channel 2.
Super Sammy putting the tea in the bag.
Wow.
It's all clowns now. Sco from West O. Nessie from the Highlands. D from Cypress Park.
D.
Ken from... Thanks, Jim. Ken from Napa Corky's Pest Control. Tallywhacker.
Tallywhacker.
Dibs. Dibs from the Burr. Flubber.
Nice.
Dibs from the Burr.
Shout out to the City of San Jose's Department of Transportation.
Old Transpo.
Keep it moving down there. Keep it moving.
Da-da-da.
Young June from the Bray.
Old June.
Willie G in the OC.
Willie G.
To Grilled Cheese Nose, stuffed grilled cheese from Fresno.
Wow.
That's a shot. Big Toe from the Reek, Walnut Creek.
Big Toe.
Diamond D from the View.
Diamond D.
Tissue Wads in Lowe's Nose.
Oh, gross.
Oh, man.
Hugh Bonner from the Ohio State.
Okay,
no,
okay.
I'm not going to say it the way you
no.
want.
No.
Oh.
Sewer Scum. Well, I don't know if that's a guy taking a shot at somebody. I'm going to pass on that one.
Oops.
Squatch in Groveland.
Whoa.
Sam Squatch from Oregon.
Whoa.
Oh, we love you guys.
Nothing
we love
from
you
D's,
all
huh, Jim?
Very much. Ian.
Nope. Come on, D's.
Williams. Jim's just waiting for D's and
I know.
Nuts.
So I'm actually looking over the entire text line waiting
Former
for D's.
Former Niner, good friend Ian Williams is going to join us in studio next. Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises. We love them too. We'll see you in a minute here on 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.